It's Saturday night.
Five.
Saturday night.
Get ready for the Saturday night.
Louder!
Okay, we're trying take two here of the live stream. We're gonna see if the audio is working. We're here, Dynasty Saturday Night 5. Please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review on the Going for Two Live podcast feed if you're listening audio. If you're watching on video on YouTube, either right now, if anybody is watching after we had our technical difficulties, or if you're watching later, please make sure you subscribe to the channel. And do a thumbs up on the video. Comment politely on it. The audio seems to be doing okay. I'm Brian Ford. I am not joined by my normal co-host Josh Walker tonight. The doctor is in. I am joined by fellow Jersey boy, Dr. Jim. What's up?
Yes. Okay. So I've never been more afraid to speak before in my entire life. Like, are you getting any audio feedback now?
Listen, if that's the thing that has made you the most afraid to speak in your life, then you've had a pretty good life.
Well, I guess we persevered. But yes, I am very happy to be here. And I'm glad we got things going. You and Josh do an amazing job, and I realize with him not being here tonight, I have some big shoes to fill, but hopefully I can do that. And for anybody that's out there that's still watching, you are the real heroes.
That's right. Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah.
Before we get started with tonight's programming, I just want to remind folks that you can design the new Dynasty Saturday Night 5 logo by sending me in my DMs. At @FFJunkie_ on Twitter, a 16 to 9 ratio JPEG thingy mabobber for our new logo. And you will win a PLP, a personal league podcast for your dynasty league, which is where Going for Two folks, including myself sometimes, will review the teams in your dynasty league and, you know, maybe roast a few and give some tips on what you can do better. Doc. Why don't you tell us about you and your work, what you do here at Going for Two, the book, plug. Tell us all about yourself.
Awesome. Will do. So I am the injury analyst here at Going for Two. For the past 3 years, I've been on the Monday night show with Kyle Senra, Gladys Louise Tyler, and Dan the B-League Rosia. And we talk injuries every Monday night. And in addition to that, I have written a book on injury analysis for the players out there to get the benefit of medical knowledge and how to kind of interpret and understand injuries without having to go to medical school and spend $150,000 plus. And that book is called Injuries Suck, But Your Fantasy Team Doesn't Have To. And that's available on audio and in print version and e-version. But we could talk about that later. But I'm just happy to be here. I'm happy to talk injuries. And I really hope that I know you guys are really entertaining, so that's not going to be an issue, but I really want to educate as well, because sometimes you just don't have time. Like, injuries happen and things happen fast, and especially in the off season, I like it to be just another tool that you can go through the process of when you're evaluating players coming up to your draft with trades, with the rookie draft coming up. It's another tool to put in your tool shed to run through your filter and hopefully arrive at picking better players, making better decisions faster, more efficiently, and hopefully leading you to victory.
Right on. And so what we're going to do then is go through a list of five, as we normally do here on Saturday Night 5. Just for folks who have never tuned in, or if you forget, we kind of use a list of five or lists of five as our way of talking about Dynasty Fantasy Football. And so tonight we're going to do five categories of injuries, one for each position, and then one category on rookies. Before we get into it, I know you kind of talked a little bit about using it as a tool in our toolbox and that sort of thing. Do you have any advice for people in incorporating injuries into, you know, when they're considering rankings and trades and, you know, outlooks and projections for players?
Yeah. I think, you know, and we'll get into it, you know, once we kind of start talking about players, I think what you'll see is patterns develop, and there are kind of some things you can take as not so much gospel, but pretty strong guidelines for individual player injuries. But kind of one of the big things globally, and I hear this all the time, especially in the off season and after the draft happens, where fantasy players and fantasy analysts will say, I don't like player X because he has no path to playing time because of this situation, this guy's ahead of him, or, you know, this situation or whatever. Well, here's the thing. Everybody has a path to playing time because of injuries. And, you know, I've heard people say, I don't like to rely on injuries because you can't predict them. And the thing is, we can't necessarily predict individual injuries, but I think we can say with a high degree of certainty that someone's going to get injured in the NFL next year. And then the question becomes, who benefits? So if you can kind of get your mind out of that idea that rosters are going to be static and that everybody's going to be healthy after week one, you know, you can use that to your advantage. You start asking yourself the question, okay, I like this guy, but he's blocked by this player. What if that player wasn't there anymore? Would you like him a lot better? Mm. That helps you be more proactive as opposed to reactive. And I'm sure you've seen that where, you know, you're out on this guy because he's blocked, and all of a sudden the guy ahead of him gets hurt. And then it's like, now you have to overpay, or you have to use all your fab to get this guy. It's like, well, what if you anticipate that a little bit? And that helps you kind of weather the storms as injuries happen and things like that. So that's a lot, but that's kind of the global process of, you know, just kind of taking injuries into account because they are going to happen. I always say the NFL and football is a dangerous sport, and we know injuries are going to happen. We may not know to whom, but we know they are going
to
happen.
Well, we kind of know to whom. They're called running backs. No, but seriously, good, I mean, point. The idea of injuries has really shaped the way that both the NFL and the fantasy community, and particularly the dynasty community, is approaching running back, you know, the last few years. And you know, I heard somebody do a really good analogy the other day. I think it was on the Dynasty Dummies podcast, where running back is like an elevator, wide receiver is like an escalator, right? With running back, guy gets hurt, next guy up, you're pretty much getting, for, you know, depends on the team, but like you're getting that guy's touches, right?
Yeah.
Wide receiver, you're getting on the field, you're getting playing time, but the targets might be more spread out, right? So, you know, when we talk about like contingencies and you know, the upside of a player or their path to volume, like you're talking about, right? You know, the one injury away guy, you know, is worth having sometimes. Yeah.
Absolutely. I another great analogy along the same lines was from Danny from the Fantasy Stock Exchange. He put out one of the things that he says constantly is, with running backs, carries are given. With pass catchers, targets are earned. And it's just kind of like, you know, opportunity for running backs is like, are you there? Do you have a last name? Are you on an NFL roster? Okay, you're up. Go get them, Tiger. And you get that production. But with wide receivers, just getting on the field, there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah.
So it becomes a lot more complicated. But that's a really good point.
All right. So a couple injuries that I want to talk about that aren't on our list tonight, but I think might speak to some of the principles that we're talking about with injuries. One of the first shorts that I saw on the Going for Two channel was you out on Dalvin because of this shoulder stuff.
Yeah.
Now we've seen his carries go down in a more pass heavy offense, but talk to me about, you know, I don't want to call it chronic, but repeated maybe nature of Dalvin's shoulders and why that's something to be concerned about if you have him on your roster.
Yeah. So what Dalvin Cook was dealing with is he had injuries to the cartilage in his shoulder, to the labrum in his shoulder, which is the cartilage ring that kind of holds the ball in the socket. And when that gets torn and when that breaks down, it becomes a lot easier for the shoulder to come out of the joint and dislocate. And we saw him deal with that a few times last year, and really impressive how he's able to kind of get to the point where it's like they kind of pop the shoulder back in like Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon. And then he's back on the field in a couple of weeks. For a lot of players, you're kind of done for a long time. You're done for the year. The interesting thing about Dalvin Cook is now he's just gotten surgery to repair that labrum. So at least in theory, his shoulder should be more stable. but you also have the issue of Dalvin Cook has heard other things over the course of his career. He's now, I believe he's 27 or 28. So there's a lot more mileage on the tires, and he's still a running back. He's still high risk. I think one of the most interesting things about the Vikings is they re-signed Alexander Mattison, and they signed him for 2 years. So they know that they're dealing with, somewhat of a volatile asset as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't think anything really changes there. Mm-hmm. I think if you were in on Dalvin before, you should still be in. And I think if you were out on Dalvin before, then you probably should still be out.
Yeah. And didn't he have the same injury to the opposite or similar injury to the opposite shoulder at one point too?
He had issues with both shoulders. So it was kind of pick your poison, either one of them could have went. Right. And, just really volatile. And the thing with him this past year, I mean, he managed to stay healthy for the most part, which I give him a lot of credit for, but his usage wasn't the same as it had been in years past. So to me, that was another thing that went into it was the Vikings know that, that he's a volatile asset, and if they keep running him out there and give him 25 touches a game and things like that, he's going to break down, and they don't want that. So are they going to continue to kind of manage his workload? And if they manage his workload, even if he does stay healthy, is he bringing you the same value as he has in years past? Mm-hmm. And I think that's another reason that you might want to consider looking elsewhere.
Okay. And they gave Mattison pretty good money for a guy that they're, ostensibly is a backup still. I don't know. There's a there. It seems a little fishy, which kind of brings me to my boy DeAndre Swift. I've been a Swifter, and it's been hard to watch. And so I wanted to talk about this idea of injury prone, and if we can do that through the lens of DeAndre Swift, because I've heard injury prone's a myth, and then I've heard, well, soft tissue, maybe there's something there as far as prone goes. But ligaments and things like that, you can't really help. So he just has this vibe, this reputation of he's always dinged up, right? That's just kind of the thing we think about with Swift is he's always dinged up, right? So is injury prone a thing, and does that apply to DeAndre Swift at all, or what? What's going on with him?
This is why I'm glad to be here on Dynasty Saturday Night Five. We're not doing softball questions here. It's like, hey, let's dive right in. Is injury prone a myth? No, I love it. So the answer to is injury prone a myth? I don't think it's a myth. I think it's something that gets thrown around pretty liberally and with a broad paintbrush, and it doesn't really apply in a lot of the cases where it's thrown around. I think it's more a process of, like I said, you heard it before, you'll hear it again. The NFL and football is a dangerous sport. These guys are really strong. They're really fast. And they run into each other with such force that it's basically the equivalent of getting into a low-speed car crash. And then if nobody's severely damaged from doing that, then they all get up, they line up, and they do it again. And they do it again, and they do it again. So guys are going to get hurt. It's like a demolition derby. So because of that, players get injured. And if it happens over, a couple of times consecutively, then you get this label of being injury prone. I don't think that that's really the case with DeAndre Swift and with a lot of other players. I think with some players, what you can say is they have a significantly higher risk of injury. So some guys we're going to talk about, Michael Thomas now comes to mind. Dalvin Cook would be another one. It's like any player in the NFL can get hurt. But there are players that have a higher risk of getting hurt based on the accumulation of injuries that they've suffered over the course of their career, or, something that's either been recurrent or they've had multiple injuries. To answer your question directly, I don't think Andre Swift is in that category. I think he's just been unfortunate enough that he had injuries on two consecutive seasons, and he's a relatively young player. So look at Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey, also a young player, had the injury-prone label going into last year, had a full season, crushed it. So is he not injury-prone anymore? I think he's has just as much injury risk going into this year, but now he has kind of some of that stink is worn off because he had a healthy season, but he could just as easily get hurt this year, and then we're back to square one. Does that make sense?
It does. So, I'm thinking of things like regression to the mean, or he was on the bad side of variance that year. And, right. Which I guess, and I didn't put this on the sheet, but it reminded me of Tua and concussions.
Yeah.
We can say he was on the bad side of variance. You know, nobody's going to get that many concussions in another year. But medically, it's easier to get one once you've had a couple. That's true, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. It's a little bit of a different animal. And the thing about concussions is you're absolutely right. Once you get a concussion for an indeterminate time period, which nobody really has a full handle on, you're more prone to get another concussion just because the brain is more sensitized to the injury. And to be clear, when we talk about a concussion, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about a brain injury. And if that sounds bad, that's because it is. We don't know. We don't know with him. And this is your brain we're talking about. So it's like, if he gets another concussion, there's a non-zero chance that he gets advice to just retire. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it definitely needs to be. He's a young guy. He's 24 years old. Like, you don't want to have issues with chronic repetitive brain trauma. You know, that Will Smith made the movie about it and all that. Mm-hmm. You know, those guys were, you know, to put it mildly, pretty messed up at a pretty early age. This is not, you know, this is not something that you want to mess around with, especially in a 25-year-old kid. So that's basically the story.
So if you're in a startup,
yeah,
are you concerned about pushing the button on Tua because of that? Not leaving aside his value where he is in it, but like, do you say to yourself, I can't control concussions. I'm only going to draft him based on, you know, his talent, his situation with Waddle and Hill, or are you saying?
A really good question. One thing that the audience, if they don't know me, they'll find out quickly. I play Dynasty a little bit different, and the thing is, there's this idea in Dynasty, oh, I'm gonna have this guy on the roster for the next 8 to 10 years, so I'm drafting this guy because I want his production for the next 8 to 10 years. That is a complete and utter fallacy. Mm-hmm. Like, trying to predict like what is going to happen in the NFL in 8 years is like trying to predict like, you know, what a snowflake is going to look like that falls outside my window 7 years from now. Like, it's impossible.
The world might not even be here in 8 years.
Exactly. So, I mean, COVID 27 could happen, and then, you know, we all turn into lizards or something. Who knows? Yeah. But you can't do it. So if I was going, when I draft players on my team, I'm basically thinking this year and next year, and that's it. And if I get any more than that, that's gravy. So with Tua, like, that's the filter that I'm running it through. So if it's, you know, if it's the second round or something, I don't even know where he's going in startups at this point.
He slipped to about the third in a lot of cases. Yeah.
Okay. So then it becomes something where if I do take him, I'm hoping for this year. And if he's still around next year, great. But that's kind of the process that I'm taking. So I might be taking that third quarterback a little sooner as a result. And I'm just not thinking that far ahead because I think you can't. Mm. You just can't.
Yeah. Last but not least, and this is only the appetizer, folks. Lamar Jackson. The thing that we're hearing from these billionaires is that they're a little more reluctant to, you know, give him guaranteed money and probe for a trade. You know, because of the amount of games that he's missed and sort of, and there's also this narrative out there that, you know, certain guys with certain play styles, you know, like a running quarterback or like George Kittle, who just, you know, plays like, you know, he's shot out of a cannon on every play. You know, they're going to miss time and they may not be injury prone, but the way they play exposes them to injury risk more. And so I was saying the other night on the Gambit, it might've been in the after hours when we were just, you know, chatting, it doesn't have to be collusion for a group of billionaires to do what's in their, you know, the interests of their pocket and like avoid doing something and be mad at Cleveland for giving Deshaun Watson guaranteed money. But I know we can't get inside these decrepit, nasty billionaires' heads, but, you know, besides asking a team to trade two firsts and give a whole lot of guaranteed money and possibly reshape your offense around Lamar, you're also asking them to bring on a guy who has missed, you know, 5 or 6 games each year. Is that the wrong side of variance, or is that, you know, he's a running quarterback. He runs, you know, like a running back, you know, like they, you know, there's something to that, you know. I mean, we hate them because they're owners, but they're not nuts.
Wow, that's a deep question. So I'm not saying that it's collusion, but I'm not saying that it's not collusion. No, I'm just kidding. The thing with Lamar is, like, I think it, like, the more you look at this, it becomes more of a fertile soil for confirmation bias. It's basically like, if he goes out and he wins games for you, then he's fantastic. But if he gets hurt, it's because his playing style is bad. So if his playing style wins you games, then that's great. But if he gets hurt while doing that, which, again, you know, there's that variance component that you talk about, then, you know, then it's a bad playing style. I don't think he's that much more at risk than other players. It's just football is a dangerous sport. Now, that being said, there are players that they run to contact on every play and their careers are significantly shortened by that. If you go back far enough, and I'm old, so I think of Marion Barber for the Dallas Cowboys. It was literally like he had a magnetic pole that was the opposite of the defensive players on every play. And he just, like, even when he could have run out of bounds, he's like, I want to take somebody out while I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. And he lasted about, you know, 2 or 3 years, and they were fantastically entertaining 3 years, but then he was out of the league. So there is a component of that too. But with Lamar and the other running quarterbacks, there are quarterbacks can slide. There's a lot of rules in place to protect them. So it's like, yeah, they're going to get hit more, but they also score you a lot of points and they can win you games. So it's like, I think it's very convenient that when I think any owner in the NFL would take Lamar on their team, but when they have to shell out $230 million of guaranteed money and, you know, they have to put that in escrow, I think that's really more the issue. The guaranteed money has to be held in escrow and they just don't want to do it. Some of them can't do it. Like my Raiders, team owner, Mr. Davis, he doesn't really have the liquidity to do stuff like that, but other owners do. They just don't
look at Dr. Jim talking to me like I know what the escrow is.
Oh, well, you know, it's they got to put the money aside, basically. They got to put it aside and they got to hold it. They can't spend it on parties and the Wolf of Wall Street. They got to put it aside and they got to hold it. So basically they take it out of their account. They can't play with it anymore and they can't do cool financial stuff. They got to put it to the side. So that's why the guaranteed money thing is such an issue. Aside from the fact they got to pay it, they got to hold it and keep it out of their hands so they can't do fun billionaire stuff with it.
Oh, see, like I just learned something. I'm not only am I learning medical stuff, I'm learning financial stuff. Speaking of financial, it's time to pay the bills. Before we get going with our list of five, and I'm going to get to Julia's comment because I'm really glad to see her tonight. We're going to talk about Underdog Fantasy. This show tonight is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. They are the industry leader with best ball tournaments and huge pick'ems and private leagues and all sorts of things that you can do. They're not just football, even though you can scratch your itch and start these best ball drafts now way super early, like, you know, for the D-gens. But you can also, you know, they got the golf and the baseball and all sorts of other things going on there. So why am I talking about it? Well, we have a promo code for Underdog Fantasy. If you are a new customer to Underdog and you sign up, you can use the promo code GF2 and get a deposit match on your initial deposit up to $100. And for those of you conveniently viewing, you can now scan the QR code, fancy, that's on the screen right now. And that'll take you to the Underdog site where, once again, you can do a deposit match of up to $100 if you use the promo code GF2. So you can get that money in there, start playing, and maybe even start winning. And I'm realizing that our QR code does have the shimmer. I noticed on Gambit it has the shimmer, and I was like, ours doesn't have that. And I realized that's probably because I'm half reading the promo, you know, on my other monitor, so I don't get to see the shimmer as much. So
we're shimmering. It's shimmering.
We're shimmering. So I was just thinking about Julia actually today. Friend of the show, Julia, NBA rigged. I was like, you know, I haven't seen Julia in the chat in a while. I wonder how she's doing. So really glad that you're here and watching. And I hope you enjoy. And by the way, Julia, if you remember yay many moons ago, I told you that if Hendon Hooker was a top five pick, I'd eat my hat or something like that. And here we are.
I don't know. You might want to get some ketchup ready for draft night. I don't know.
He keeps getting mocked in the first round. I even saw, you know, one of these draft Knicks mock him fifth to the Seahawks. I don't know. Julia might have been on to something with a crystal ball back then. Let's see here. Jamie, being a Raiders fan, would you want them to move up and get Anthony Richardson because of that running quarterback question? If I'm an Anthony Richardson fan, which I am, I don't want the Raiders because I don't think, you know, they can develop a quarterback. I don't want him there. I want him with good coaches and a good system and that sort of thing. But, you know, theoretically speaking, if you're a Raiders fan, do you want them to take the guy who ostensibly has the most risk? I mean, rookie contracts are cheap, quote unquote, you know, relative to the second one. So maybe less of a risk if you have him in the first few years, right?
I am with you 100% on the whole Anthony Richardson should be QB1 in rookie drafts. I have to be honest with you. I think that the idea of the narrative of how he can't throw or that he's inaccurate and therefore like he's not as good as some of these other quarterbacks is preposterous. Like we've seen this time and time again for fantasy purposes. Justin Fields, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, these quarterbacks are all rock solid QB1s and they couldn't throw when they came into the league. The same thing happens over and over and over again. All prospect growth isn't linear. You learn, you get better, and all you have to do is cross a little bit of a threshold and you can run from day one, and then you learn how to be a better passer. You grow into the position, and then you become Jalen Hurts. You become Lamar Jackson. You become this fantastic weapon.
Hopefully soon, Justin Fields.
Justin Fields is on that track. The people that are the Justin Fields haters because he's quote unquote not a good passer, get with the program, people. So, yes, I would love for them to get Anthony Richardson on the roster. And if he busts, he busts. I mean, he can't be worse than Jamarcus Russell. Hello. So like the bar has already been set. The precedent has already been made. So I'm a huge fan of that ceiling. And if you can get him on the roster and develop him even just a little bit. I mean, Tim Tebow was a QB1 in fantasy. Yeah. So come on, people.
Yeah. And not that Matt Waldman needs me to do promo for him, but the poetry that is the passages that he writes about Anthony Richardson is worth the $21.99 to get the RSP to begin with. And if you want a Reader's Digest version, he's on a podcast, you know, tour, including his own, you know, doing the promo. Watch when he talks about, you know, Anthony Richardson is a jazz musician and the NFL is going to try to make him start over because he doesn't know Bach. Or he has this like really cool analogy of being dropped into like you and I taking language classes and being dropped into a foreign country and the ceiling of like our development with the people being only so high and we still need sort of a crutch of a translator and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, Anthony Richardson might be the less experienced of the fewer classes, but you drop him in the country, he picks it up quicker, learns the culture and the humor, doesn't need the translation. Like this idea that he can't throw or can't learn or isn't good in the pocket or can't read defenses. Oh, don't get me started, Dr. Jim. Don't get me started. Oh.
Well, you're a history teacher, correct?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
I mean, this is a great example of the old, you know, it's somewhat of a cliche, but those of us who don't remember history are what?
Doomed to repeat it.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen it already. So it's like, this is the opportunity to get a player with that type of ceiling on the roster. If you got to wait a year, so what? You know, like we've talked about Dynasty is about this, you know, this longevity process, but everybody wants it yesterday. You know, like give the guy a year, let him develop and see what happens. But the ceiling, the ability to have, you know, a top five quarterback, like that literally doesn't come around very often. And this is your opportunity. So I think there's a really good chance that anybody that takes him is going to be very happy.
Jim, you just earned a permanent co-host spot by being on the ARQB1 train. Josh, if you're listening, you've been replaced.
Josh, you're fired.
At least for three weeks. And then when Richardson slides into the third round and the people who are dumb enough to compare him to Malik Willis end up right for 14 seconds, you know, then I'll just dump Jim and get Josh again. But in the chat here, Julia, pumping up Hooker again, asking us who we would comp him to. Geno is my comp for Hooker. Comps are fuzzy sometimes, but I think he's gonna have the benefit of having to sit for a while because of the knee and stuff, and learn the NFL offense, because the offense that he had in Tennessee was fun, and in some ways has some exotic things that, you know, the NFL could learn from, but in other ways, you know, he's reading half the field and doesn't have to read the other half. And so he's going to have to learn. Do you have any thoughts on Hooker?
I actually have a question for you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because you guys, like the rookie work that's done, you know, here on Going for Two, you know, and in other places, but here especially, is tremendous. And I think the audience knows that already. But let's just talk a little bit of a hypothetical with Hendon Hooker and see if we can imagine what things would look like. So let's just say that his ACL injury never happened. Like, it's not an issue. So yes, he's 25, whatever, but ACL never happened. My question to you is, what type of a runner do you feel like Hendon Hooker is? Because I know he could run a little bit, but how much is a little bit? Like, what's the comp, like, rushing wise to a quarterback in the NFL for you?
I think Geno's a good comp. I think so as far as prospects go, I think he's like above Young and would have been, or in fact, probably still is above Young. Above Stroud, not quite Richardson or Levis, of course. As far as a current NFL comp, maybe Dak a couple of years ago, or the way that Burrow doesn't do many design runs, but he can get himself out of trouble. Hooker does some design runs. Maybe not quite Trevor Lawrence, maybe something like that, right? Okay. So yeah. So speaking of quarterbacks, let's get going with the main course here and do our list of five. So we have injuries at every position and then rookies. Do you want to start with quarterbacks?
Quarterbacks is good. There's a lot of meat on the bone there. So okay. let's get into it.
All right. So Stafford, Purdy, Kyler, you know, we're going to touch on these guys. Anybody you want to take on first?
Oh, wow. I mean, we have some really interesting stuff here. Let's talk about Kyler Murray first, because I think he's the one that kind of like has the most juice, like going into rookie drafts. Like, you know, he's the one that's either being traded away or being traded for. So let's just talk about a little bit about what happened with him. So he tore his ACL. We all know that. He had surgery on January 3rd. So this is where the timetable for what's a reasonable timetable for ACL injuries and how can we kind of process these things globally to understand what's going on. So this is what I can offer you. The magic number for ACL injuries is about 9 months. If players come back from an ACL injury prior to 9 months, at a minimum, there was an article from the 2016 British Journal of Sports Medicine that said their risk of re-injury is significantly higher. So most, if not all, NFL teams are going to hold a player out with an ACL injury for 9 months minimum. And then depending on the complexity of the ACL tear, that's when you can get into situations that we'll talk about with Javonte Williams, J.K. Dobbins, complex ACL tears, things like that. Chris Godwin had an ACL and an MCL tear around the same time last year, and he made it back for week one. So it does happen. And he did all right. I mean, he had 104 catches for 1,000-plus yards. I mean, that'll work, I guess.
Sure.
So they're probably going to work Kyler Murray back slowly because of all the money they have invested in him. But I've heard some estimates that he's going to be out until week 8, week 10. I don't know about that. Like, he's young. Like, it could be 4 weeks. Mm. You know, it could be less. So ask yourself, what's that worth to you? Even if he does start slow and he doesn't run as much as he might in the beginning, as he continues to ramp up, like, you really want him there towards the end of the season when you're coming down the stretch, when you're going into the playoffs, you know, and he could be back to Kyler of old next year. He's young enough to do it. The timetable fits. So I think it's really kind of being not so much overplayed, but people are being really, really, really cautious. And I don't think they need to be quite as cautious with him. Just throw something else out there. What do you think the long-term outcome analysis for ACL recovery is? Like, what percentage of players in the NFL today return to their previous level of functioning? If you had to put a percentage on, I'm going to put you on the spot.
You know, on my other podcast, we went over a list of running backs and we kind of said, like, did they get back to, you know, good enough, you know?
Yep.
And we did like a 1 year later and a 2 year later. So I don't know.
50-50. Interesting. I'm going to do like Morpheus from The Matrix. What if I told you that it was about 90%?
Oh.
Yeah. It was about 90%. So all this worry that we have about players with ACL injury, it's like, yes, you're going to miss time. You're going to miss 9 months, in some cases about 12 months. About 90% of the ones that come back return to their previous level of functioning.
How long did that study go back, I guess, is my question.
That is a really good question. I think it's exactly the analysis.
Because we're in the era of like ACLs aren't what they used to be.
Correct.
So if the study is, you know, bounded in that era, then I can understand the 90%. You know what I'm saying? But the running backs we were looking at were like as far back like as Adrian Peterson and Edgerrin James and even before that, you know what I mean? So
it was relatively recent. I think the time frame that you're talking about, the numbers that they did analysis on were in the 70s, the 80s. So it's gone up a little bit, but it was still pretty high. I mean, it was still 70-75%. It's gotten better since
then. All right. So I'm glad I'm hearing this optimism, because basically my index on Kyler was he's going to miss 6 weeks. He's going to be rushing a little bit like Kyler toward the end of the year. His rushing will be back in 2024. And you're saying slide that timetable up.
I think you can. I think that's in the range of outcomes.
All right. So Jamie bought Kyler Murray for the 211 and a 106 in Superflex. I like that.
I think that's great.
As far as prices go, you're also seeing Kyler dip to like the early to mid second now in startups. He's just so cheap. Go get yourself some Kyler. I know, you know, between the ears, is not maybe what we want him to be, but, you know, I think as far as, you know, in this super flex economy with how bleak the quarterback landscape is, even with the rookies coming in, go get yourself some cheap Kyler. Let's talk about Matt Stafford. We've heard the word chronic used for his elbow and his back. And I didn't know it was a spinal contusion. We've heard retirement rumors circling around. I'm getting him in like the 10th, 11th, 12th round of startups as like my QB3-4. I mean, he's going around Desmond Ridder range and Jimmy G range and Brock Purdy range.
Yeah.
What can we expect out of Stafford? I mean, I think age has to be a factor too when you think about this recovery.
Yeah. I mean, I believe he's 35 now. So again, like the thing with him is he had a spinal cord contusion, which just to be clear is a bruise to the spinal cord, which people can get paralyzed from that. In some cases, depending on where it is, people die from that. So this is a really, really serious injury. He says he's fine now. He says, you know, he's coming back, but he's going to get hit eventually. So I think when you draft him, the thing is he's been in the league for 27 years. He's got millions of dollars. He's got a Super Bowl. I'm always rooting for the player on paper, but this is very high risk. So I think if you draft him, you're drafting him for this year. It's almost like with Tom Brady a couple of years ago. Great player. You're assuming you're going to get 1 year out of him. If you get two, that's gravy, and then that's it. So if you draft him, I think you draft him with the idea of like, I hope I get a full year out of him. If he makes it past this year, that's gravy, and that's the way you approach it. And if you can stomach that, if the price is right for that, then I think you're good. Anything beyond that, I think you're projecting too much and you might get left with empty pockets.
Yeah. I can dig that. Yeah. He's kind of in that range now where it's like Brady, you know, Rodgers, like who the hell knows how long he's going to be around. This could be his last year. Could retire at any minute.
Yeah, absolutely.
But reunited with another player is being undervalued and injured. Cooper Kupp, we might get to him a little bit later. So Jamie in the chat is asking about the Lance injury. And that was sort of like a while back, and we're seeing him now pretty much, you know, on that path to recovery. Meantime, the guy who possibly Wally pipped him, Brock Purdy, hurt his UCL, but apparently didn't have Tommy John surgery. And I don't know. Some people are saying that's a red flag, that he should have gone ahead and gotten the full on, you know, surgery plus. I mean, I'm assuming he's got good insurance with the NFL. But you know, again, you're hearing it's a 6 month thing. So he's going to start throwing only in September. And then you're hearing people say he's ready week, you know, he's going to be ready week one. I try not to listen to, you know, coach speak and GM speak, but
good process. You
know, what are your thoughts here on Brock Purdy?
Well, just to touch on that really quick, I think one of the most unreliable sources of information on any injuries are twofold. It's the player themselves and the coach. So if you're going to listen to nobody else, like if you're going to listen to anybody else, I would literally rather get injury advice from a street corner derelict than I would from the player or the coach. So you really can't take any of that, you know, with any type of substance to it. So here's the things that I think are relevant to Brock Purdy. I'm going to try to be brief. We know a lot about UCL injuries, and that's the ligament that's on the inner part of the elbow. That it happens a lot in baseball. I know you don't do baseball anymore, but Josh's a big baseball fan, as am I. The thing about UCL injuries in pitchers and as opposed to quarterbacks is the nature of this injury was a lot more violent. There was a lot more damage to the ligament because of the way that the arm was pushed when he was throwing and the damage to the ligament itself. You don't see that level of force with pitchers. So it's the nature of the injury is different. And it was so bad, and the swelling and the inflammation and the injury was so bad, they actually had to wait and postpone the surgery for a few weeks before they could actually go in and fix it. That's atypical. That doesn't usually happen. So that's the bad news. The good news is that when they did actually go in there, they knew the UCL was injured, and they said, all right, like this is kind of a mess, but there's enough of it there that we can do an internal brace and use some of the ligament itself. We don't have to take the whole thing out. It would kind of be the equivalent of like, you know, if you threw a rager at your house and you're like, okay, like the living room is trash, the kitchen is trash, the bathroom is trash, but, you know, a couple of the bedrooms are okay. So we don't have to clean those up. We can just focus on, you know, the areas that are really messed up as opposed to doing a full, you know, clean the whole house. So I don't know if that analogy works, but the idea is that they went in, they looked at it, and there was enough intact ligament to brace it. And that may help him get back faster. But there's a wide error bar or wide variance is how long it's going to take. It could be 3 months. It could be 6 months. It could be longer. It's just kind of like you have to start ramping up, and it's like, we'll see. He gets out there first. Can he move his arm? Does he have full range of motion? Good. Next, like, can he do his lifting and his workouts and his PT? Great. Now, can he throw a little bit? Okay. Can he throw harder? Can he throw further? Are there any roadblocks that come up along the way? So this is what I'm going to propose to you. This talk of him being the leader in the clubhouse, he went from being Mr. Irrelevant to the NFC Championship game. What are they supposed to say?
Yeah. I mean, come on, right?
So it's like, okay, yeah, he's the leader in the clubhouse. Can he throw? I don't know. So that's going to be relevant. Lance never got a shot to do his thing. Like, in a straight competition, are we sure that he doesn't win even if Brock Purdy is healthy? I mean, this guy has tools. He never really got a chance to display him. He played one game in a monsoon last year, and then he broke his ankle. So I'm still in on Lance. I don't know. Like, I liked him before. I still like him. And I still think if you take the Pepsi challenge with Brock Purdy, I still kind of feel like Lance is going to come out ahead, or he's going to get traded, in which case he's going to start for them. So Whoever he gets traded to.
Yeah, I think I'm coming around to the idea that, like, San Francisco's probably going to trade Lance. I agree that people are prematurely burying him and doing the I told you so because he didn't get the audition, right? He didn't get the audition that Zach Wilson got, right? Yeah. And so if I'm San Francisco, Kyle Shanahan, who didn't want Lance, now has that plug-and-play quarterback that he can put into his genius offense because anybody I can put in any quarterback because I'm the genius, not the quarterback, right? He's got that, you know, college quarterback that started over 40 games. It's very coachable, you know, that, you know, is not a project like Lance. So I think they probably roll with him, which means I think go get you some Sam Darnold. And then, you know, they'll probably trade Lance. And I think – so right now might be an opportunity to buy Lance before he does end up in that new destination with more hope. And to speak to your, you know, we were talking before about rushing quarterbacks retaining their value. I mean, half the dynasty community is ready to bury Trey Lance, and he's like a fourth, fifth round startup pick. So, like, you know, it says something, right? Like, you know, I'll take him at that value. So I think the lesson here is go get you some Sam Darnold and possible buy opportunity on Lance before he gets traded anywhere. What do you think about that?
Totally agree. I love it. And the other thing I'll just add really quick is Brock Purdy can play and he can run that offense. So this is not an anti Brock Purdy, stance. He can definitely play. He earned those accolades and he ran that offense very well and he could do it again. The only question I have is how much of that was contingent on Christian McCaffrey being healthy. And now if Christian McCaffrey gets hurt, is Brock Purdy the same as he was last year with Elijah Mitchell or whomever else?
The weapons, the coach, scheming up layups for him.
Yeah.
The defense. Yeah. I mean, I think he's a product of all that. I'm not, he improved. He improved from Mr. Irrelevant and he had time to absorb things in the playbook and things like that, you know, that, you know, maybe other people didn't have a chance to get, but yeah, I think he was a product of the team. So let's move then to running backs.
Yeah.
Last year, everybody was saying, ooh, Dobbins second surgery. And then I heard Dr. Jim say, they're probably just cleaning up scar tissue. And someone like me who had a second surgery on my shattered ankle, was an arthroscopic surgery that was pretty much just cleaning things up in there, as the doctor put it. He said, you know, I remember he was saying stuff about like, and then there's things floating around in there. I'm like, oh, this is really cool. There's things floating around in my ankle, right? and you know, after the arthroscopic surgery, I had a cane for a little while, but you know, it's improved. So I was okay with Dobbins getting a second surgery, and I have a few shares. I have some fears about him as far as like the Ravens liking to rotate backs and, you know, the low pass catching upside with Lamar being there. But we saw Dobbins flash toward the end of the year last year, and he seems to be on that arc of second year back from the ACL. What are your thoughts on Dobbins?
Well, I have a question for you first. When you had the cane, did you also get the top hat and the monocle, Mr. Peanut style? Or
Yeah. And I shook it at youngsters and said, "Get off my lawn!"
Get off my lawn. okay. So that is fantastic, by the way. Let's talk about ACL injuries and kind of like try to put them in categories just really, really briefly that I think if you can absorb this.
Yeah. Cause we're going to get to Javonte, which is a different story. Yeah. Right. So please. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So with ACL injuries, there is something called the unhappy triad, which is.
Hold on. That's I was going to get way political with that, but go ahead.
Okay. I thought you were going to go going from two unhappy triad, which is Jeff Lambert, Tom Tipple, and Ryan Searfaw. So that's a whole different. So these three injuries kind of tend to run together due to the mechanism of the way the ACL gets torn. And that's the ACL injury with an MCL injury and a medial meniscus tear. So it's not uncommon to have those three things run together. That's not as big of a deal. Obviously it's not as good as just tearing the ACL and having that be a solitary ACL tear. That's probably, if you're going to tear your ACL, that's what you want. If you have an MCL and a medial meniscus injury, plus minus on top of that, it may extend your track a little bit depending on how bad the MCL is torn. They may need to wait 4 to 6 weeks or so before they go in and fix the ACL. So it extends your timeline beyond that 9 months. Now you're looking at 10 and a half, 11 months. At least you can make something out of that. Here's where it gets a little different. The LCL, the lateral collateral ligament, or the posterior lateral corner. That is a separate injury that if they don't fix that, that is a source of ACL repair failure. So if you hear that there's an LCL injury involved as well, that's when things get a little bit more complicated. The surgery is more complex. And there's another thing that can kind of go wrong where you end up with pain, instability, or a longer rehab time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened to J.K. Dobbins.
Mm-hmm.
So it took him about 13 months to get back. He needed that scope and that cleanup, which I think, again, was just removing some scar tissue. And it happens. It's a complicated surgery. There's a lot of moving parts in there. He's still only 24, J.K. Dobbins is. So he's got that going for him, which is nice. So I rolled the dice on him. You know, it's like, even with all those other things that, you know, you're talking about, as far as rotational things and things like that. It seems like the market like appreciation for J.K. Dobbins is trending downward, whereas his production and his ability to do more is probably trending upward. So that to me says possible buying opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree with you. And so let's talk about Breece and Javonte.
Yeah.
You know, we're in the world of ACLs ain't what they used to be. So for me, I think me still having, you know, Breece Hall ranked number two dynasty running back at the moment until I put the rookies in, right, I don't think is really all that nuts, but we'll probably have to wait a year, right, quote unquote, till he's the second year back from the ACL. What are your thoughts on that? And if you want to, then just compare him to the multi-ligament thing with Javonte.
Yeah, it's a really good comp because I think there's a divergence there. With Breece Hall, he had a less complex tear, and it was in late October of 2023. So 9 months out from that puts him back in late July. There's already positive reports coming out about how things are going great, which is exactly what you want to hear, and in contradistinction to Javonte Williams, which we're going to get to in a minute. He could be ready for training camp or soon thereafter, and week one availability for Breece Hall is very much in the range of outcomes. So it's like all ACL tears are not created equal, and you don't want to put them all in the same bucket. And Breece Hall is one of those players where it's like, I'm even more optimistic that as long as we continue to get positive reports, like he could be back in week one and he could be doing Breece Hall things again this year.
Oh, okay, cool. Interesting. As opposed to Javonte, we hear mixed reports on whether or not he's going to start the year. The team went out and got Perine, which is, I think, a buy. And from what I understand, I'm no doctor, but his tear was more complex, multi-ligament, stuff like that.
Yeah, so his was the the J.K. Dobbins style. So he tore his ACL, and there's that LCL rearing its ugly head again. So he had that complex tear about the same time, a little bit earlier than Breece Hall tore his ACL. 9 months for him has him back in July. Week one is 11 months post-injury. You know, maybe he misses a few weeks of 2023. I think that Javonte Williams could be on the J.K. Dobbins track. So the difference is, and now we're hearing negative reports, like we're not sure if he's going to be back to start the year. So it's not the same as Breece Hall. And we're not really sure how this is going to go. It's not really confidence inspiring that they signed Perine. That doesn't mean that all hope is lost, but if you use J.K. Dobbins as a possible template, that could be more of what you're looking for, where next year it's like, maybe he's slow to start. He, you know, has some issues where they rotate, you know, other players in and things like that. And then maybe if that all goes well, we're looking at 2024 where he really can, you know, start to get back to normal. He does have youth on his side as well, so that definitely helps. Age 25 and under is kind of like the magic number as far as like,
oh, it sure is.
When, yeah. when things really heal as opposed to when they kind of heal. So he's got that going for him, but I think it could be a longer track where it's like, I wouldn't really want to count on him and maybe as much as I would on some of these other players for 2023, but beyond that, he could be back to the way that he was.
Okay, so I'm hearing a little bit more aggressive timeline for Breece, maybe buy from managers who are a little skittish.
A little skittish.
Depending on your team arc, it might be good to tear down from Javonte now and get a useful running back plus. Like, say, you know, I don't know, a Cam Akers, an Aaron Jones, Dalvin Cook, if somebody, you know. And get a little plus on top. Or if your arc is probably not going to compete till 24, maybe, you know, buy Javonte from that skittish manager who needs that production now. So let's talk about JT.
Okay.
You have here in the show sheet what a difference a year makes. Like, yeah. Bruh, he gets a little banged up with his ankle. The team has a bad offensive line and some shitty quarterbacks, and people are ready to bury him like he's dead. Like, what's going on with JT?
That is, I mean, that's like recency bias in a nutshell, right? Let's roll it back to last year. Christian McCaffrey was the one who is the injury prone guy who people said, don't touch him because he's going to get hurt, right? He's going to get hurt. And JT hadn't gotten hurt since, I don't know, I think he was like seventh grade intramurals or something like that. And he gets hurt. because football's a dangerous sport, right? And now he's the one that's going to, you know, that has the injury risk, and Christian McCaffrey doesn't because he had a healthy season. I would argue neither of those things are true. If anything, Christian McCaffrey probably has a little bit more of an elevated risk just because of his history, but it's not that much. But it's not as disparate as people are kind of making it out to be. Just because Christian McCaffrey had a healthy year last year doesn't mean he's going to make it through this year intact. And just because JT got injured last year doesn't mean he's you know, not going to be healthy this year. So, you know, recency bias is a thing. We talk about it a lot, but this is it. So this is when you have to kind of just say, all right, if injuries are essentially created equal, or maybe you give a little bit of more weight to Christian McCaffrey because of his age and injury history, how do I really value these guys based off of that and not based off of narrative or based off of quote unquote risk aversion? I mean, JT was supposed to be the safe play, right? It didn't work out that way. He really never was. He plays running back. No running back is safe.
No, that's true. And before we move on, let's get to Julia's burning question here about what we're drinking. I do take sips of a drink a lot. I think some of that is nervous energy, but I drink coffee 24/7. So you're going to see that. And then
Kyle Senra, we drink coffee on this show. Okay?
We're Americans. and you may also see some seltzer, often in the citrus variety. And both of which are non-alcoholic. So, April 5th, Wednesday, was 21 years without a drink for me. Wow, so, Dr. Jim, what are you throwing back tonight?
Well, I am hydrating with some water right here, nice, and I'm working tonight, so I'm drinking a light beer, but it's a non-alcoholic light beer. So, okay. If I miss anything tonight, it's because I'm stupid, not because I'm drunk.
Okay, there you go. Right, and Dr. Jim, stupid, not drunk.
If that's the takeaway, then you did it right today.
let's spend just maybe a little bit of time talking about everybody's favorite injury-prone guy, Rashad Penny. Okay. Is this just like a bad luck guy or what? Like, you know, everybody's like, oh, you know, well, okay, in week six when he's out for the year, you know, I'll just you know, buy the backup or whatever. This guy, I feel so bad for him with the track record he's had. So what are your thoughts on what's going on with Penny's ankle?
So I love talking about Rashad Penny and kind of injury prone, you know, the narrative. Let's just do a rundown of the exotic injuries that he's had over the last 3 years. He strained his calf, he strained his hamstring, he tore his ACL, and he had a high ankle sprain and broken ankle. Football's a dangerous sport. You guys are going to be saying it with me by the end of the show. Mm-hmm. He's 27. He's going to be on a really efficient offense. 5 games out of his last 11 have been over 19 PPR points per game. Whatever games he gives you, he brings that ceiling. So it might only be 5, but what if it's 10 or more? What if he gets lucky this year and he doesn't get hurt? You know, I think that this idea that he's going to get hurt, I think you could say that about lots of running backs in the NFL. They got a decent chance of getting hurt. Maybe his injury risk is a little bit higher, but it's not significantly higher. And then again, it becomes confirmation bias. Like, he gets injured in week 13 after he's had, you know, 9 double digit PPR points per game. And they're going to say, ha, I told you he was going to get hurt, mm-hmm. but you got a lot of value out of, you know, out of that player before he got hurt. So I think that's important too. Like, the guys that you can have on your roster that maybe they're not going to give you a full season, but when they're out there and they're available for you, you can plug them in and you can get good production and you can bank on that. I think those guys are really valuable, and they kind of get undervalued by the dynasty community because of that idea of, like, they're not safe or they're not consistent. It's a week to week sport. Guys get hurt. You got to start, you know how it is, Brian, tell me if I'm wrong. Week one, everything is perfect. It's all lined up. Then by, you know, halftime of the week one games, it's like, okay, this guy's hurt. This guy's, you know, injured. I got to start shuffling things around. I got to make waiver pickups. I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to keep the ship pointed in the right direction because I'm taking on water.
Yeah.
This is a guy that can plug a hole for you, and you ride until the wheels fall off. And if they fall off in week 3, okay. If they fall off in week 13, that's even better, and maybe they don't fall off at all. Maybe you get a Dalvin Cook season out of him, and he manages to hold it together for a whole year, and then you roll the dice again next year.
Yeah, we had Pollard on the sheet. I was going to skip him for time a little bit, but Julia's asking about him here.
We can touch on it really quick.
When I shattered my ankle, it was tibia, not fibula. And it was like very, very distal.
Yeah.
And there was a name for it, like a fracture that was named P-line fracture or something like that.
P-line fracture. P-line.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it was like, and then it was fractured in like two other places. The doctor called it shattered. Right. And my ankle has never been the same. It never will be the same. But it was also not an under 25 injury. However, when I heard about Pollard, and it was like, I don't want to say just the fibula, but it was just the fibula.
Yeah.
I was okay with it. And when I heard the recovery time was quick, I was okay with it. Julia says she heard it's complex. What are you hearing about Pollard?
Basically, the fibula is a non-weight bearing bone. So Travis Henry, if you remember him, you're older like I am. He played on a broken fibula. So it's something that it doesn't hamper Pete. You can play on a fractured fibula if you really wanted to. So he had surgery for the Pollard had surgery for this in late January. He's probably already fully recovered or close to it right now. I'm not worried about him at all. And I'm not worried if they bring somebody else in either, because he did just fine with Ezekiel Elliott taking whatever it was, 17 carries a game. So bring somebody else in. I don't care. I'm still high on Pollard. I don't need him to carry the whole offense. Just get out there and do your thing. And when they give him the ball, you know he's going to be explosive. So I'm all for it.
All right. Let's move on to wide receivers. You mentioned him before, Michael Thomas. I learned finally what the medical definition of turf toe was by watching the Monday night show with Dr. Jim. So let's talk about Michael Thomas, because it's a situation where there's the medical, but then there's the like whole diva thing where like, I don't want to play, you know? So I couldn't know how injured he really was and all that. So what are we making out of Michael Thomas?
It's a really, really interesting case study in how these things can play out, not just related to injury, but related to the player and how the team and the player dynamics work out. So he dislocated his toe and it required surgery in November of 2022. And this was after he essentially missed a year and a half with a left ankle injury, which sounds like it was probably mismanaged due to miscommunication by the player and the medical staff and the team. And everybody's just kind of angry at each other over that and pointing fingers as to who did who wrong. So, you know, as of now, this is the worrisome part, aside from the, you know, the narrative and the color and the context. The toe is still not fully recovered, so that's not great. And he's still with the Saints, and he could be a good fit with Derek Carr. But at this point, I think he's just a high-risk, high-upside dart throw, and you got to recognize it could all go to zero again at any point, and that's what you bank on. If you get something out of it, great. And don't invest anything that you're not willing to lose. It's like cryptocurrency, you know, don't put more into the market that you're, you know, could go to zero at any time, but the returns could be really good as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, I guess there's a lot to that when figuring out like how to rank him or what to predict his production will be. Also he's pushing 30. So let's talk about Cooper Kupp. You know, and his injury, and you know, I think he's another buy. I think he's being undervalued right now. Jay Stein from Debut Royale did a really good video, like mathematically showing how he's kind of being undervalued. So, yeah. What do we make of Kupp's injury and factoring in his play style and his age? What can we expect from Cooper Kupp?
So, just help me out here. How old is Cooper Kupp? Like 29.
I think he's 29. He might be 30 by now. I know he's at least 29.
Okay. So he's like 29, 30. Mm-hmm. So what happened with him is he had a high ankle sprain and he got a surgery called a tightrope surgery, which is basically they put hardware in there to kind of hold the ankle together and help it heal better. And it actually shortens the recovery time. I think it's one of those things where if the Rams weren't a complete dumpster fire by the end of the year, he probably could have came back and played. And we've seen what he is able to do. I mean, just the Super Bowl when they won, it was like everybody in the stadium knew it was going to Cooper Kupp. And what does he do? He catches the game-winning touchdown anyway. Like, that's essentially his floor, is they're going to throw the ball to Cooper Kupp if he's on the field. And it doesn't matter if he has weapons around him. To a certain extent, it may not even matter who the quarterback is. But let's say it is Stafford. I mean, his upside is tremendous. It's like, yeah, the longevity may not be there, but you know, if you're playing for a year or two, like I said, he's a really safe asset, and he's not at risk for any more risk for injury. He could do really, really well for you.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's in some leagues there you could probably tier down from like Waddle or DK Metcalf or I don't know, maybe a couple other dudes and tier down, quote unquote, to Cup and get a plus.
Yeah.
And get really good, like, you know, really good production, wide receiver one production.
He could outproduce them and you get the asset on top. The thing is that how much longer is he going to be doing it for? 2, 3, 4 years? You know, I don't know if you can think that far ahead. You know, it's what am I looking at this year and maybe next year? And then you take it from there. Anything can happen.
All right. So I have a couple more wide receivers here listed. Okay. I'm going to throw their names out and you tell me like one that you want to talk about for whatever reason.
Okay.
I'm a big J-Mo fan and he, you know, J-Mo with the knee and then he came back late last year.
Yep.
Bateman in the foot, Wandale in the knee, and then Tim Patrick's returning from an ACL this year. So anybody you want to talk about there?
Well, I'll tell you what, let's hit them all rapid fire style.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. Bateman, Lisfranc injury, over a 90% level of return to previous functioning. So if you were a believer before, he'll probably never be cheaper. Mm-hmm. And we talked about with the ACL, how it's like 80s, 90%. The return from Lisfranc, even higher than that. So it's like, if we're comfortable with ACLs and we should be very comfortable with Lisfranc's, and most people aren't. We even saw with Travis Etienne how well he did after a Lisfranc injury. So Wandale, ACL repair back in December, 9 months puts him back mid-September. Giants have 75 receivers on the roster right now. I don't know how that's going to go, but you know, he's got the potential to be back.
And like most of them can play the slot too. So like,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Tim Patrick, ACL tear in the preseason of 2022. He had surgery in August. He should be able to have a normal offseason. I really liked Tim Patrick last year. If Judy or Sutton get traded or hurt, oh man, like he could really be good. And he's essentially forgotten about. I mean, he's pretty much free at this point, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then who was J-Mo.
Yeah.
Jameson Williams. So this is one, and I love Shane Manila on Dynasty Trades and Five, but he's been essentially slandering Jameson Williams because he's a face planter because he didn't come back, and he says context doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. He didn't produce. He had a torn ACL. The Lions were going nowhere, and he had to acclimate to the league as a rookie. Like, there's a lot that goes into that, so they brought him along slow.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what he can do this year. If you were in on him before, you should be in on him again. So let me ask you, as the guy who really knows the rookie rankings. If Jameson Williams was coming out this year, where would you rank him with the wide receivers there?
Right. So I had this debate on Twitter with folks a little bit, or was it YouTube? I don't know. A friendly debate as I try to. I would say three at worst, and probably two. I probably would still have him behind JSN, but that's it. That's really it, because. When last year, I kind of had that tier of four guys of Garrett Wilson, Olave, J-Mo, and Drake London. I was like, I don't care. They're all wide receiver one. Who cares? Mm-hmm. They're just one big tier. Pick your poison. You know. And I thought J-Mo had the electricity and the dynamism to maybe even have the highest ceiling. He lands in Detroit. He essentially doesn't start his rookie year until like late in the year, right? So we have to keep that in mind. Chark is gone now. You know, the offense was, I mean, when they have home games, the offense was like the totals of the two teams was in the 60s for Lions home games. You know, I like him. I don't see any reason to slander him. Do I have him up in the rankings where I have London and those and Wilson and Olave at the moment? No, and I don't think you can. I'm a believer. Yeah.
Is that just because you haven't seen it or because you're worried about the ACL injury, or like what's holding you back from that?
I think there's a little bit of, you know, let's be real. I've seen it, you know, and I haven't seen it yet from those guys. So I do want to see it. you know, particularly because that offense really, you know, loves to run. They just got Monty, you know, and they love to feed Amon-Ra. So just, you know, I just want to see how he fits in with Chark gone. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's totally valid. We got, I want to speak to this really quick. So from NBA Rigged, I worry about Patrick. Denver is going to be running more with Sean Payton, and Patrick is still the third wide receiver on the depth chart, which is absolutely true until he isn't. If Judy or Sutton get traded, now you might really have something. Or if they get hurt, because it's the NFL and players get hurt. So you have Tim Patrick. He's just kind of marinating on your bench. And then all of a sudden, one of those guys isn't there anymore for whatever reason. Now you really got something. That's exactly what I'm talking about. That's how you process these things. That's why everybody's down on Tim Patrick. And that's why you can get him cheap and you just see what happens. And even if it's for 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, if he's able to step in and now he's the wide receiver too, I think that could be really nice.
Tight ends. Is Zach Ertz's career possibly over?
I don't think so. I mean, how old is Zach Ertz now?
In his 30s, I think early 30s by now. The thing is, I had heard that his was a complex, you know, multi-ligament thing. Mm-hmm. And like, maybe not career over, but McBride's there. The team is going to be cheeks this year, we think. Like, just like, I mean, he's just never going to be, I think, a semblance of what he ever was, which wasn't very elite to begin with. So maybe, am I burying him too soon?
I think you are. I think he's got more potential than that. I mean, I get it. He's 32 and that's, you know, ancient.
32. Yeah. He'll be 33 in November. By the way, Cup will be 30 in June.
Okay. Thank you for that. So I realize 33 is ancient in the football community, the dynasty community. And I try not to take too much offense to that as somebody who's going to be 47 in a couple of months. But he did have a complex.
Well, hold on. Let's pause here. I just turned 45 in June. All right. So okay. Viewers, look on your screen. Okay. And on your right is what 47 could look like. And on your left is what 45 currently does look like. Whose life do you want? I'm sorry. Please go ahead, Dr. Jim.
Oh, man. Oh, how am I supposed to recover from that? That is fantastic. So he did have a complex tear, but let's bring it back to 45 minutes ago. It was an ACL and an MCL, which we know now they run together. So it's not that unexpected. Yeah, it makes things a little bit more complicated. Maybe it pushes his recovery out a little bit. But he had surgery in late November. 9 months has him back in late August. Maybe it's something where he starts the year on the pup. But this is still a guy who, you know, can be really good. And what are they, you know, what's the old narrative about like young quarterbacks or, you know, kind of backup quarterbacks, like the safety blanket with the tight end? Like, yeah, mm-hmm. I like Trey McBride's potential, but I mean, Zach Ertz is all reliable, right? Mm-hmm. And if he's out there and he's running around, like you don't have to be fast and dynamically. Jason Witten did really well without mm-hmm. being, you know, a particularly electric athlete. So he just got to go out there, run a few yards, turn around and catch the ball. And that works. So I wouldn't bury him just yet. Now, not to say that it's going to be a guarantee, but to say that his career is over, you know, I think that's probably a little bit too strong.
Waller, Pitts, Irv, anything that you want to touch on with those guys?
Irv Smith, meniscus and high ankle sprain. This guy has been really unlucky. He's still only 24, and he's still got that top 10 tight end upside. He's going really cheap. So he's somebody I would definitely want to look at, especially given the barren wasteland that tight end, you know, kind of.
And he landed on the Bengals, which, mm-hmm. you know, I've never really been a huge Irv fan, but considering the injury affecting the price and his landing spot now at the Bengals, if there's ever a time where I have a little bit of optimism about Irv, it's probably now.
Yeah, and he could come on and come on quick. So it's one of those where low investment, potentially high reward. Kyle Pitts, he's been talked about a lot. He didn't really have that bad of an injury in the grand scheme of things. He tore his MCL, grade 2 tear. He got surgery for it. Not really concerned here. I don't think the community's really concerned either. Like, he's maintained his value and you know, we're just waiting for him to put it together. Like, this is year 3. It's like, come on, Kyle. Like, give him a quarterback, give him an offense that throws the ball more than 7 times a game, and let's see what this guy can do.
Yeah. When he was on the field, his targets per route run, target percentage, yards per route run, things like that were very good, right? So if that volume increases even a little bit, like the total passing volume increases even a little bit in Atlanta, like watch out, you know. And he's probably cheap, you know, not as cheap as he was a little while ago, but yeah, probably cheaper than he should be. Yeah.
And Darren Waller, no new concerns here. You know, high ceiling but high risk. I'd still be willing to take my shots. I don't know what you feel about the Giants and kind of how they utilize their tight ends. It kind of seems to be somewhat of a polarizing, one of the polarizing positions for them. But he's a veteran and he could command volume, especially if they don't kind of bring in an alpha wide receiver. He could be kind of their de facto, you know, alpha weapon for them. So, you know, he's really interesting, but he is high risk.
Yeah, for sure. So we did quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends. Time for five on the list of our list of five here on Saturday Night Five. And that's rookies, right? Now, these damn HIPAA laws and damn privacy for these 19 and 20 and 21 and 22-year-olds, I need answers, Dr. Jim. So a couple ones that we have highlighted here. We talked a little bit about Hooker before, so yeah. Why don't we start with him and then move on to a couple others?
Okay, yeah. So, you know, real quick, you know, just to go over it again, he had his ACL tear with surgery in December. 9 months puts him back in week one. That's interesting. That's not really getting bandied about too much. So you watch the landing spot and the draft capital. And if he gets first round draft capital, he could come on and he could come on quick. Now, I've listened to the shows before, so I know. And I know you were kind of teetering with this. And, you know, I wonder how you feel about it today, because every day is a new day. But where would you put him as far as the quarterbacks now?
I still have him as five. Simply because I believe Will Levis is trash.
You hate Will Levis.
I hate Will Levis.
You hate Will Levis. Ryan hates Will Levis. Lots of people. Shane Manila hates Will Levis. Lots of people hate Will Levis.
But I know that someone in the NFL won't.
Will Levis might be a really nice guy. Have we ever considered that?
Listen, he puts mayo in coffee. He's canceled. Like,
all right. You know what? I didn't know that. So, now I'm with you.
Right. So the only reason I have Levis above Hooker at the moment, and not by much, really. Levis is in my most recent rankings, 23 overall, and Hooker's 24 overall.
Okay.
Right. And the only reason is expected draft capital. And by the way, they're in a tier of 20 to 29, so they're relatively close in the sense that it's a tier anyway. If tomorrow I get inside information that, you know, I don't know, some team is going to trade up into the late first to get the fifth year on Hendon Hooker, and I like the landing spot. And no offense, Dr. Jim, the god-awful Raiders organization drafts Will Levis. That's foot-flopped for me. I'm now starting to be a little more optimistic about Hooker than I would be about Levis. So okay. I don't know if that answers your question, but
it does. It does. And I like that. And I like the process. I would implore you that if Hendon Hooker gets first round draft capital, that you, if you like him over Levis, put him over Levis. Mm-hmm. Evaluate them based on what you think they can do this year and going forward. If they both, to me, I feel like, and I'm not the expert, you guys are the experts, but if they both get first round draft capital, I have Hendon Hooker over Levis. That's the differentiator. So
that's valid. I like for that. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Kayshon Boutte, ankle, there's mental stuff with him. There's effort stuff with him. There's sex party stuff with him. And it's kind of hard to separate all that out when you know that we heard ankle surgery and it lingered into 2022, something that Kyle brought up on the Gambit. I hadn't heard this. There's speculation that it was an Achilles.
Mm.
What do we know about Boutte and what can we decipher as far as, I mean, he's fallen in draft boards and a lot of people are basically not drafting him anyway. He's do not draft, right? But let's say, I don't know, an NFL team takes a chance on him and drafts him round three, early round four. What do we know about the injury as far as the information that we're going to process when deciding what to do with him?
Yeah, I had not heard anything about the Achilles being involved. I had just heard ankle fracture in 2021 requiring a revision surgery later on. And then he kind of sucked in 2022. And he had a bad combine, and it's like, and then there was the, you know, the allegations of, you know, the off the field stuff. which, you know, as somebody in their early 20s, I don't know how much you can really hold that against them. You had a great line on one of the other shows. You're like, I actually bumped him up in the rankings because of the sex
party. Listen, guy goes to a sex party. He has my heart. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, you know, what are you going to do? So anyone can have a bad day. That's, you know, the thing about the combine is like, you know, it's another tool that you put into the tool shed. You run it through the filter. It's part of the resume, as you and Jamie were talking about, which I love. But it's just one piece of data, or it's one data set. Anybody can have a bad day. And, you know, I know we're running a little long, but I'll give you an example. One of the biggest days of my professional career was when I had to study, when I had to take the radiology board exam, which is basically like you get certified by the Board of Radiology to go be a radiologist, which is what I do.
Well, hold on. You're a doctor who fixes radios and you're trying to tell me about injuries?
Yeah, come on. They gave me the Marconi Award.
Where's your zero credibility?
To be able to go out there and read x-rays and CAT scans and MRIs and ultrasounds, you have to sit for this exam for basically 4 hours. They show you a bunch of stuff and you have to tell them essentially exactly what's going on and try not to mess anything up too terribly. Well, my exam was in Kentucky and I flew in the night before. I went to a fast food restaurant, which I won't mention because I don't want to slander them. But I wasn't feeling so great the next day and I still had to go take this exam. So if I would, I did fine. I passed the exam, everything worked out. But what if I would have not done so well on the exam? Context matters. It's just one day. Does that mean that now all of a sudden, like, I don't know anything and I'm not qualified to be a doctor because I had a bad day? Maybe Kayshawn Boutte had a bad day. Unfortunately, the blocks are starting to stack up. Now, he's got a pro day coming up. Am I correct about that? Or did he have it already?
I'm bad at the calendar of pro days because I released a video that said Izzy's pro day hasn't happened yet. And when I released that video that I recorded the day before, a couple hours later, his pro day happened. So I should probably learn the calendar a little bit.
I was curious because it's hard to listen. There's a lot to keep track of.
Like, yeah,
they do the combine. They don't do the combine. They do a pro day. We're going to have a pro day, whatever. So the thing is, that would be another data set where it's like, okay, did he just have a bad day? Like, is he mentally stressed because of the stuff that's going on? He wanted to go back to school. Now he's not going back to school. He's coming out on the draft because they didn't want him back or he didn't want to go back, whatever. There's a lot of stuff going on and he's still a young kid. So there's a glimmer of hope there if he does better at his pro day. He's shown the potential in the past. He just hasn't shown it lately. So I can see why people are out on him, but I think it's to the point where people are just like, he's quote unquote bad at football. Like, I don't know if that's necessarily the case either. So, you know, I think he might be worth taking a shot on if it's not going to cost you so much. And with the recognition that it's really high risk, but there is, you know, some pretty good stuff on tape as far as what he has done in the past.
Kayshawn Boutte, pro day was March 29th. He just did measurements.
Okay.
He didn't do any time. Well, hold on. Oh, three cone was 7.08. It's not great. It's not great. Not terrible, but it's not great.
So here's the thing.
He didn't do anything else. He didn't do the shuttle. He didn't do the 40. He didn't do the vert. He didn't do anything.
That's not great. Yeah, and here's the thing. Here's the question you got to ask yourself. Did this surgery, like, did he really mess something up there and he's quote unquote not the same? That's a possibility as well. So I think it's okay to be out on him. But I still think there's a glimmer of hope, but I also think that on the range of outcomes is that he didn't come back from this surgery. Like something got messed up in his foot and he's just, there's a very slim margin of these elite athletes where it's like you lose a little bit and you're not elite anymore.
Yeah.
And now you can't compete consistently at the professional level. Doesn't mean you're not a good athlete anymore. Doesn't mean if you play flag football with him, he's not going to send you into the shadow realm, but he may not be able to perform at a very high level as a professional.
If it were, say, a mid-range Achilles problem, like not like low grade, if there is a such thing as low grade Achilles, or like, and not like a complete, like the things rolling up your leg or whatever, but like
right.
normally, like, would that be a situation where it could be he's not going to be the same thing? Like we say ACLs aren't what they used to be. We haven't figured that out with Achilles yet though.
Right. We haven't. And up until this point, and we can throw in, let's see, who was the guy that had the
Ibrahim.
Yes. Yeah. So he had an Achilles tear in 2021. He had a monster season in 2022, which is super impressive. And that gives us hope considering that Cam Akers, with his 188 carries, 786 yards, and 7 touchdowns, is literally, to date, the best case scenario for the injury moving ahead of household name Mekhi Lashore as the previous index case of success for injury, you know, for Achilles, tendon repair. So things are definitely improving, but we don't have anywhere near the body of work and evidence-based, ability to, make analysis on what these things are going to look like. With Butte, to answer your question directly, I don't know if it really matters. Like, it may be an issue, it may not be an issue. I think the thing is that not all recovery from injuries is 100% in some cases. Mm-hmm. And it's not something, sometimes we don't ever get the answer. It's just, as you said with your ankle, it just isn't right anymore. And, speaking for myself, I have a torn labrum and a dislocation and had to get labrum repair in my right shoulder. That's my throwing arm. And it just was never the same. It happened in my early 30s and I can't really throw anymore. So, I never got back to that previous level. I'm not an elite athlete. I was in my 30s, but sometimes something happens, you go and get it repaired and it's just not the same. And again, that margin for these professional athletes so slim, sometimes that's enough.
I got a wild labrum story to tell you later. I'm a Ty J Spears truther. But there's rumors that there was a second knee bust in there, and we don't know that for sure. He came back and performed very well his last year in school, but this brings me to the question of, you, there could be teams in the NFL, especially if they think that there's some truth to the second one, that just take him completely off their board, not drop him, take him completely off their board.
Yeah.
Cause they're just like, and we won't really know that until later on. Right. So Kincaid's, I think, was a back thing, or, Tucker is a mystery, right?
Yeah.
Kendre Miller knee thing that he didn't do the combine. Right. If we see these guys sink lower than we are expected, including and especially Spears, is that an indication to us that it's probably the medicals, or we just don't know until we hear it was or it wasn't?
The short answer is we don't know.
Yeah.
And I realize that like the idea at face value is it sounds like a cop out, or it might not.
No, be helpful. No, no.
Here's the thing that I really want people to take into account when they're looking at drafts and draft capital and things like that. And again, I'm not the expert, but think of it in your drafts that you've done. What's the saying? It only takes one team to reach, but it takes all the teams to let somebody drop. Mm-hmm. So I think that if somebody goes higher than maybe you expect, that could just be one team kind of making a reach. If somebody falls way further than kind of the community, thinks that they should. And I think of Malik Willis last year when he ended up in the third round, it's like, well, maybe this guy isn't as good as we thought he was. Mm-hmm. Everybody passed on him. So that, I think, tells you more. And the other thing is with running backs, like we talked about earlier, it's more about opportunity. So he's demonstrated, whether he had one ACL tear, two ACL tears, whatever, he did fine in 2021 and he blew up last year. So he can play. Yeah. And if he gets the opportunity, he could be really good. I think that's going to be more relevant to his value, is does he get the opportunity? And sometimes you just got to be lucky. What's the old saying? It's better to be lucky than good. Well, if he's lucky and good, then he could be really productive for you. So that's my Tajay Spears take. How's that land with you?
That's great, man. Anything that doesn't sink him and his confirmation bias for me loving him is I will take. But ACLs, unlike some other things we've talked about, especially concussions, there's not like a higher rate of recurrence thing, right? Like, cause a repair is it's repaired, right? Like,
you may
not ever be 1,000% yourself, but like, it's repaired. It's not under a higher risk.
That's actually not true. I think the numbers are, again, it's in the high 80s. The players that come back, the ones that return to their previous level of functioning, is in the high 80s. So for all intents and purposes, you are yourself.
Okay.
Like, these players come back and they are themselves.
I guess I was talking about like the ones who don't, like, you may, I guess the question is whether or not you return to be your old self, right? It's not that you're at any higher risk of re-injuring or injuring it again, because repair is a repair, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a low percentage that they get re-injured again. I had the number, and I actually was like, "Oh, we're not going to talk about this." I'll get it for you. What does Lancet say?
What does the British Medical Journal
say, Doctor? What does the literature say? I feel like I'm back in my rotations for medical school.
Yeah. All right. Well, before we land the plane here, yes. What's the most annoying thing that you see out there? You know, I'm a teacher and I know a lot about history and, you know, whatever, right? So when I see people get things really wrong about teaching and education or history, right? Like, there's a special way that it hits me,
yeah.
Right? You must not spend much time on Twitter because of all the armchair doctors that are out there. Like, what's the most annoying thing to you when it comes to like people with fantasy football and injuries?
Okay. That is a really good question. So this is what I'm going to say to all the people out there, such as yourself and the people that are really good at doing the analysis for rookies and players coming into the draft, which players such as myself who are not good at that really rely on and really appreciate. So here's the thing. This is the off season. There's not a lot of stuff going on. It's mm-hmm. like we have the draft coming up and people are pouring hours, weeks, potentially months into taking all of these different things into account, running them through their filter, putting out their rank lists and things like that. So we have our pre-draft rank list, right? Players such as yourself and lots of other people, they put a lot of effort into that. So the thing that drives me nuts is after the draft happens, you have this player X ranked, you know, in a certain area, and then he goes two spots higher than somebody else does in the first round. And then the players will flip flop them and say, well, this guy went a little bit higher, so therefore I'm going to bump him all the way up because he got a little bit higher draft capital. And that drives me frigging nuts. Like, as much as we complain about like, oh, this coach doesn't know what he's doing, these GMs don't know what they're doing. You know, that narrative is out there, but all of a sudden when the draft happens, every NFL team is a genius, and all the work that we put in for the last 4 months essentially gets thrown out the window. Like, people have confidence in the effort that you put in there. What if, and you know, we're both Jersey guys, so, you know, I'm just gonna, you know, get a little spicy with the language here. What if the NFL GM is a fucking moron? So have confidence in your own abilities and don't throw it all out the window because one team reaches for a guy, or, you know, there's a whole list of litany of reasons of why a player can get picked that have nothing to do with his football ability. So if you like somebody going into the draft, don't invalidate that because he slips a couple of picks. If he slips four rounds, that's different. If you don't like somebody going into the draft, don't like him. If a team reaches for him, that's not your problem. Let it be somebody else's problem. You want to trade him, that's fine. That's a whole different conversation.
Yeah, but
don't take him because another team took him. Take the guy that you want, that you think is going to be good, because he might actually be good. Okay, rant over. How'd I do?
Well, I think you kind of sidestepped my question. I wanted you to dump on people who are talking about medicals and injuries like they know what the fuck they're talking about.
Oh, the thing is that the thing about that, to answer your question directly, is when narratives get created that aren't based on anything. It's like, I just have you know, a feeling that this guy is not going to be good, but I can't really quantify it on anything. If it's a gut feeling, that's fine. But it's like, this guy got hurt, so he sucks. And this guy didn't get hurt, so he's good. And it was like we saw with Jonathan Taylor and Christian McCaffrey last year, where it was like, everybody's like, avoid Christian McCaffrey. If you take him in the first round, you're an idiot. And he's definitely going to get hurt and whatever. Nothing is definitely going to happen in the NFL, except that somebody's going to get hurt. We don't know who it's going to be. Somebody's going to get hurt. But the idea, the confidence that I know this guy is going to get hurt. No, you don't. Nobody does.
And folks, just a little bit of inside info. Dr. Jim roots for injuries. He wants guys to get hurt.
That is not true.
Because he cracks his knuckles and says, my time to shine.
No, to be honest with you, I hate injuries.
No,
I hate
seeing
players get hurt.
Yeah. It's rough. All right, folks. Well, we kind of had an aborted mission and had to do take two because of technical difficulty. So we gave the people a little bit more than they bargained for. And I really appreciate the doc taking his time out on the weekend tonight. Please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review on the Going for Two Live audio podcast feed. If you're here on YouTube, please make sure that you like the video, subscribe to the channel, maybe make a comment or two. That'd be great. Remember the logo design contest for Dynasty Saturday Night 5. Send me a 16:9 ratio JPEG in my DMs on Twitter, FFJunkie_, and you can win a personal league podcast from Going for Two personalities for your Dynasty League. Dr. Jim, time for plugs.
Oh, man. Look at this. I'm sweating here. It's like I'm on the hot seat. Look at that. So plugs, I am, floating around the Going for Two network and, guesting wherever I get the chance. I'm the injury analyst here at Going for Two. I did mention my book at the top of the show. It's called Injuries Suck, But Your Fantasy Team Doesn't Have To. And in that book, I try to give you all the tools that you would need in order to become the best injury analyst, you know. It's available on Amazon, print version and ebook. And it's now an audio version narrated by the sexy baritone voice that you're listening to right now.
Okay.
Truly. And just a quick honorable mention. We didn't get a chance to mention it, but I want to throw it out there just before we go. Najee Harris with Pittsburgh had a Lisfranc sprain last year in training camp, played through it all year, rookie QB, crappy O-line, all the cards were stacked against him, and he still rushed for over 1,000 yards with 10 TDs. So that's basically his floor. So barring another worse injury, I don't see why everybody is so pessimistic out here. Go get yourself some Najee Harris. Year three, he could really take off. And everybody seems to hate him for some reason. I don't know why. But
well, he's gross and inefficient and volume dependent, but he's going to get the volume. So, yeah, I definitely am more optimistic on
him. And he was playing on a Lisfranc injury last year. So if that's healed, again, greater than 90% return to previous level of functioning. So you could see rookie year one all over again in year three, and I think that would be pretty valuable.
That's very plausible. You can find me, FFJunkie_, on Twitter. You can find me, obviously, here every Saturday night, 7:30, goingfor2.com. I have rankings and articles, a lot of prospect profiles. So please make sure you check those out. You can find me on my other podcast, Dynasty Fever. Episodes drop Thursday, audio only, at Dynasty Fever Pod on the Twitters, goingfor2.com. And the whole family of content that we have everything for you, IDP, Dynasty, Redraft, sort of pop culture spin on. We have like a podcast every night of the week. We've got articles on the website. If you go on the website, go on the little bottom right, click on the purple Discord thing, join the free Discord. It's on and popping a bunch of channels, including, you know, we're going to have that robust Scott Fishbowl presence that on the Discord that we had last year as well. So please make sure that you hop on board there. I guess that's about it. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And Dr. Jim, do you know how to close the show when Josh isn't here?
First of all, I will say thanks for having me on. First of all, I don't want to let it go without that. Is it Go or Irish by any chance?
There you go. All right. Have a good night, folks.